The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. I had actually already reached out to Bloomberg's Mark Bergen this week to talk about the Google Civil War. But then, of course, there was other big Google news this week. So, come for the assessment of Google's ongoing culture conflicts, and stay for an assessment of regime change at Google and a whole lot more. You know, Mark, as we just said, we were going to talk about Google anyway, but then, news broke this week. What everybody said about this changing of the guard thing was that it was sort of surprising, but not at all a surprise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this was probably coming at some point anyway, but is there anything that we can take in terms of why it's happening now?
Yeah, I mean, it's like sort of when the dust settled 4 years ago on Alphabet, right? Because initially when they created Alphabet, it was sort of shocking to the world, and certainly to people at Google. But then, a day later or so, it's like, okay, this is, Larry had effectively receded and given up a lot of the day-to-day managerial duties to Sundar anyway. And much the same way, I think what is surprising about this is that we've never got a sense to say that, like, Sundar was involved in, like, making decisions about allocating capital to Waymo and to Verily and the other bets. So he joined the board, I think it was last year. And that way, yes, he certainly had on the board, he had responsibility for that. But I've never come across anything from the official messaging of the company or even really in the reporting that's think of another Alphabet company, right? Loon doing the sort of telecom networks with the helium balloons in the sky. You never hear about Loon having to pitch Sundar on its budget for the next year. And now that's something that's part of his job description officially. So that's probably the biggest change where that's been, the past 4 years. Whenever we've asked the company what Larry and Sergey have been doing, they say they're working on all the other bets.
So your impression was they were the ones allocating that capital. They were the ones doing the whatever check-ins in terms of how Loon is doing, how Waymo's doing. They were still engaged in the other bets part of it?
Yeah, I think that's still an open question about sort of how much they're engaged and how much they've been engaged in the past 4 years. I think in some of the reporting they've had that Larry Page was certainly involved with Google Fiber, for instance, which was another bet in 2016. And has both the founders, especially Larry, care a lot about autonomous vehicles. There's evidence that they were definitely involved in the lawsuit with Uber and Waymo. And certainly, Sergey has had a strong interest in some of the Google X projects and some of the healthcare work. Certainly, Ruth Porat, who's been the joint CFO of Google and Alphabet, isn't involved in all those decisions and been probably much more hands-on. I think Alphabet has its own sort of team working for Ruth Porat, and each of some of the larger Alphabet companies have their own sort of in the past 4 years, build up their own management teams and corporate structure. And that's been the official line from the company is okay, now those management teams and corporate structures are now sort of mature enough that they don't necessarily need the founders involved as much as they did before.
Yeah. All right. So what I said this week on the show was at the time that the Alphabet thing happened, an ex-Googler said to me, Brian, the simple thing is Larry and Sergey don't care about the day-to-day of running the Google business. The Google business is fantastic. It's just, they really do want to change the world. Mm-hmm. They really do are shooting for the moon and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything we can read into the fact that they're stepping back from the thing that this person ostensibly told me was designed to keep them engaged? Like, is it that maybe the self-driving cars haven't happened soon enough and things like that?
Yeah, I think at this point it's sort of pure speculation, both on my part and then certainly people I've talked to. So I don't know. I mean, the other speculation that people have talked about, and I don't necessarily think this is true, is that neither of the founders have been particularly interested in over the past two decades in political and regulatory issues, and so much of the company's facing arguably a lot more regulatory and political pressure than it ever has.
Why do they need the hassle of going before Congress? That's for people like Mark Zuckerberg, who still seemingly have a vision for whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, go back to 2011 and Larry Page was the official CEO, but the company, and I don't know the official, how this actually sort of went down, but the company ended up sending Eric Schmidt, who is the chairman and former CEO and obviously much more comfortable sort of being in front of Congress and playing that role. So there's that argument, which could be partially true. There's the, as far as timing, there is, I don't necessarily know. I mean, certainly Waymo has the public narrative, and a lot of in people you talk to in autonomous vehicles is yes, they've not made as much progress as Sergey Brin was talking about even 5 years ago, or 4 years ago. But I don't see, like, it seems like they're still being invested in. John Krafcik is still the CEO, so there's no real indication that the founders have lost faith in that effort. The same could be said for Verily, which is now raising a lot of outside money and like sort of shaping up in this way where they have, Google Alphabet is sort of one of many stakeholders in Verily.
And everybody is seemingly super hot on healthcare all of a sudden. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And Google, I mean, what's been a little bit strange is that Google has, Google hired someone to run Google Health. The cloud business is also doing Google Health. DeepMind, which is a separate Alphabet company, had a healthcare effort. That effort's been folded into Google proper. I mean, there have been so many sort of moving pieces in the Alphabet empire. And I think you could make the argument Nest, right, was started off as a sort of prototypical Alphabet company, right? It had its own brand, its own email addresses. Tony Fadell, when he was running Nest, was its own, and he would always say, we're not a Google company. And Alphabet gave him plenty of cover. And then fast forward to 2018, and Nest is part of Google and Google Hardware. So there is a sound argument for the fact that some of the reasons why Alphabet was formed don't make any more sense.
What's your take on Sundar Pichai as the leader of the company vis-a-vis like the rank and file and the Googlers? What do you think? What are you hearing from them about this changing of the guard?
Yeah, what I can say is, I mean, we can go back to we published this story. I think it was earlier this year about so every year. I think it was January this year. Every year, Google puts out like many companies, right? And sort of feedback and surveys. They call it Google Geist, and that from numbers that we saw in our reporting, Sundar, like the faith in Sundar's leadership dropped. And I think it was somewhere, I don't remember exactly, but somewhere in like the 70% range down from like the 80s or 90s. So it's not like still, like if he was a president, it's still an overwhelming support internally. And I do, this is what something that people certainly on the public relations team say, and I think there's truth to it, that a vast majority of the 100,000 plus people at the company, It's an amazing job. It pays well. Typically, they're treated very well, right? It's still this company where it's still printing money, and Sundar has taken the company from 2015, this point when it was like there was questions whether it was going to be sort of follow the earlier like the Steve Ballmer Microsoft era and become like sort of staid, non-innovative company. And second, it was this concern that it was just going to be trounced by Facebook and mobile advertising. And neither of those things have happened. That being said, there's clearly a much more vocal, strong contingent around the more recent case around the four employees who were fired for data security policies, according to Google, and labor organizing, according to the employees. There's still active resistance to some of the work that the company's done with the military.
Well, let me interrupt you, because this is what we were originally scheduled to talk about. So, when you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation, where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months. Or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride. How do you make a password that's strong enough so no one will guess it, and it's impossible for you to forget, and do it for 100 different sites, and make it so everyone in your company can do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. More than any other product I've ever told you about, I can vouch 1,000% for 1Password. I can't live without it. 1Password makes strong security easy for your people and gives you the visibility you need to take action when you need to. Any device, anytime, 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. All you have to remember is the one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. 1Password's award-winning password manager is trusted by millions of users and over 100,000 businesses, from IBM to Slack. It beat out 40 other options to become Wirecutter's top pick for password managers. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/ride for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/ride. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/ride. I've been saying on the show that there seems to be a civil war going on inside Google. Do you think that's a fair assessment? If not a war, there certainly seems to be a lot of skirmishing going on lately between...
Yeah, it's maybe a guerrilla warfare.
Okay, hold on a second. Because actually what we need to do here... Help me understand this. Because one of the reasons I've had a hard time covering this is because there seems to be so many different vectors here. Like, there's Me Too stuff. There's, like, the James Damore political stuff. Mm-hmm. There's the organizing workers and a labor union sort of way stuff. There's the whole not wanting to work. We'll come back to the Pentagon and AI stuff and all that stuff you wrote about in the last week's issue. Mm-hmm. But are these all related, or just a multi-headed hydra? Like what – is there some theme running through all this? What's going on? Sorry.
Yeah, I first of all, I think it needs to, like, everyone interested in this should certainly read Natasha Tiku, who's at the Post, Washington Post now, but wrote this great story in Wired, very envious of, that sort of laid this out in a great chronological story. And I think from her reporting, and I'd say it's, I agree with this too. Like, James Damore, if you remember the memo in 2017 that he sent out about diversity and political bias, that is sort of the ground zero for a lot of, I mean, both Damore and then the Trump election, right, are set off, I think. What Damore's memo did was there was a faction in the company that felt like they're, like, kind of exposed to this, like, oh my God, there are people inside Google who think this way. And that, I think, set off just I think operationally you have, whether it's sort of internal chats, like I think a lot of this happens on encrypted messaging, right? Like there was this group of employees that became activated and sort of outraged about that. And they were sort of had this network that was built in, and then Maven hits, right? Or later.
Is that the group of nine or the so-called group of nine or whatever?
I think the group of nine is a little bit different.
Okay,
so
okay.
I can,
sorry.
Yeah, the group of nine, no, I'm happy to, the group of nine, I think from my understanding, and thus far they've never been made public, but who's in that, but that was a group of employees, engineers who were working on what's called an air gap feature, right? To basically allow Google's cloud business to operate like AWS and Microsoft. And so AWS can provide the cloud contract for the CIA, for instance, because they have an air-gapped cloud that meets certain higher certification standards from the government. And Google at that point didn't have that. And so my understanding of that, and according to Natasha's reporting too, like this group was sort of working very quietly to oppose that and talking to senior management, Urs Holtz, who runs the infrastructure at Google and is like Google employee number eight and sort of incredibly powerful there. And they were negotiating with Urs directly, and sort of he decided to halt on that. And I think that set off when Maven became more widely known inside the company and certainly outside, that set off this sort of rolling ball that's just gotten bigger and bigger with the walkout and with the Dragonfly in China. I mean, I think there are certainly employees and the contracting issue too about how Google treats its contractors.
Yeah. I'm going to circle back to all that, but
sure.
Specifically, so I'm thinking of your piece in last week's issue. When it comes to like Maven and this military stuff, is this, number one, maybe this is macro in the sense that this is where cloud computing is going anyway, but maybe in the specific to Google sense, you know, again, like they're sort of a mature business on a certain level with their advertising stuff. So like they need to go to these sort of Pentagon contracts to get revenue. And look, they're not alone. I mean, the whole Jedi thing as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you know, one way to look at this, and I think it's totally true, is that Google's trying to pivot. Sundar Pichai has put all these resources behind the cloud business, behind hardware, behind these two lines that are new lines of businesses. You know, include YouTube is sort of the third front, but YouTube's still advertising, right? So hardware and cloud computing, hardware, kind of the model for hardware of a culture of a company is Apple, right? Like things are done in silos, things are done secretly. And then the model for cloud computing, I think in this case is Amazon and Microsoft, which have very different company cultures, Amazon in particular. And so that, you know, in our story that in the Business Week story, Meredith Whitaker, who's been one of the most outspoken former Google employees and around ethics and AI, talked about how Google was its first two decades, right? Like the care deeply about the end user, right? And that's been Sundar's mantra for a long time. And the end user in that case was the end user of search, right? Of Android, of maps, of all these consumer tools.
Us.
And now with this pivot, right? Exactly. This pivot, there's the end user is enterprise, like in this case, the military or oil and gas companies, sort of enterprises that not a majority, not all Googlers, but certainly enough to be organized and be outraged about this, feel that they do not want their software code and their work supporting.
Okay, like I swear I'm gonna get to that and ask you that in five different ways. But real quick, this. The Thanksgiving Four who got fired, all the articles keep mentioning organizing, you know, sort of a vague term. What specifically does that mean? Like, what were they organizing about? Was it about, like, the so-called TBCs, the temp vendor and contractor? What's this organizing mean?
Yeah, so this is this is according, I'll kind of, they're according to Google, its official comment on this is that they've never confirmed who those four are. And Google says that they fired four people for what they called repeated violations of their data security policies, right? So according to the four organizers, the four engineers who said they were hired under these policies, they were active in, I believe, so primarily in Rebecca Rivers as one of the first to identify herself as being fired. She said the primary search she did was going into the Google intranet called MoMA and typing in GCP, which stands for Google Cloud Platform, and then CBP, Customs and Border Protection, right? And so at that point, there was some reporting that I actually don't know the time frame, but around that time, there was some speculation that Google was going to work out of like a initial contract with CBP. And so both Rebecca and then two of the others were involved, and there was a petition that came out that from Googlers that said, we do not want the company to ever work. We want the company to come out and say, we're not working with ICE or CBP or because of ethics and because of concerns about the impact on refugees and immigrants.
It's largely political issues.
Yeah, it's for that. They were involved. Some of them were involved in Maven protests and the Dragonfly protests about the search engine in China, in the protests from June about the company's policies with hate speech and YouTube. I guess that's the broad category would mm-hmm. be political. I mean, according to, you know, I spoke to them earlier this week, according to them, right, they feel that they are doing their sort of due duties as Googlers to go out and sort of report something that they find is still wrong, right?
They quoted that from their blog post that like that's in our don't be evil, blah blah blah, and report stuff that you see that's evil, right?
Yeah, and I've certainly like Google people will not say this on the record, but there are people I've talked to the company who kind of would say, well, like you're working at a company, right? Like this might. Google is a very large digital advertising company, a $800 billion company, and they're sort of like you can't. The logic of some people there is that, of course, the company took this action, right? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you need to be heads down and get back to work, right? I think there's been that sentiment, and there's been that sentiment in the company for a long time, right? Like there was sort of always a faction that sort of rolled its eyes at some of the like ethical and political debates happening.
Right. Okay. So
the company.
This is the time to ask the same question in five different ways. So
sure.
How much of this is Google was the don't be evil company, and so it attracted a certain type of I'm not being pejorative, but let's call it an idealistic employee. And now that is not coming back to bite them is not what I want to say. But like it's in the wash now because of that. How much of that is that?
I think a fair amount. It was like Facebook, right? It as part of its recruiting pitch, the company, and we've reported on this as well, right? Like that both companies sort of had this broader sweeping mission statements about changing the world. And, you know, they certainly didn't come out and say, come work for a very large ad tech company, right?
Right, right.
it was you're working for Google, your product, your work is going to affect billions of people, which is true. And you also sort of the perks of being a Googler is you get to have this regular, you know, like the early times there where they would sort of have the TJF where Larry and Sergey would stand up and anyone could ask any questions and you got to do the 20% projects and you got to wear hoodies and t-shirts. Think about all the sort of like standard tropes about Google and like what the culture it set for Silicon Valley. Those things are definitely true. And I think they also, to be wholly frank, they draw like incredibly intelligent people who think about problems in the world and complex problems with technology and AI and the future of AI and automation and ethics in a way that many other people don't. And they also have set up this culture where certainly software engineers feel, I won't say entitled, but feel like they have the leverage to speak out and
privilege
things,
and the freedom.
The privilege, yeah, exactly. Been something where Google has, I think, built up that for a long time very intentionally. And the question is, one way to view it would be, and now they're like coming down and trying to change that pretty dramatically as they've just become so big and as they're sort of turning into more of a cloud computing business.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So then, a counter to that would be, this isn't specific to Google. It's maybe endemic to all of Silicon Valley right now, the 2016 election, or, you've got protests against Pentagon stuff at Microsoft, climate change agitation at Amazon. So, and forget tech. Maybe this is everybody at this point. It's maybe not just Google. It's just maybe, sort of sharper there because of what you were just saying.
Yes, certainly. I mean, there's, we're on the, specifically on the tech working with the military and WIC working with immigration agencies. We've seen protests at, there's a pretty active one happening now at GitHub and Microsoft. There's one happening at Microsoft in general around their work with both JEDI and then HoloLens with the military. There are employee protests, I think smaller ones that others have reported on at Palantir, Salesforce, Amazon. Obviously, all that has happened under the Trump administration, and that is, if not the primary factor, certainly like a major factor. Mm-hmm. There's stronger. There've been like pretty strong work from some leaders who've been pretty active in like AI and ethics and tech organizing, which is having much more presence here than it's certainly 3-5 years ago.
Well, another way to ask the same question is, to the degree that you're willing to speculate, how much of this is maybe generational? Because that's part of regime change, too, is you're talking about Gen Xers, 40- and 50-year-old people turning over the reins. And again, maybe this is endemic to everybody, but how much of it is just that, younger, more idealistic workers aren't willing to sign on for certain things?
I think that's fairly true. I wouldn't say that across the board, though. I think one thing that we've, one thing that I think is really interesting to see going forward with Google is how much of, how much people that have been willing to kind of come out and be very public. I don't think this is necessarily generational, something that the four, of the four organizers who were fired, two of them were transgendered, and they spoke about this specifically about how certainly like transgender people at Google feel like they're more willing and like to speak out because they feel like this affects them, and they're more aware of the impact of certain policies than a cisgender person at Google. I don't think that's necessarily generational. We started off the conversation talking about Larry and Sergey stepping down.
Yeah.
Larry's actually younger than Sundar.
Yeah.
Which is strange to think when we think about it. It's not like there's been a generational shift at the company.
Okay, not generational, mm-hmm. capital G, but like you said, we started off talking about, sort of regime change or changing of the guard. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, or when you talk to Googlers, do they feel like something has changed at the top, that management is more aggressive facing off against them, or the workers have gotten more, like, what's the mood?
P.S. Mark had to switch phones real quick, so
For the remainder of this episode, if the audio sounds slightly different, that's why.
I think so. I think that's bearing out. I think, again, like I think the what I have not been able to show, and what's harder, I think, to show in reporting is proportionality, right? Like how many of there are certainly employees that feel like, you know, this place has changed significantly. But I can't say that's like an overwhelming majority or even majority of the company, right? And there's a little bit of selection bias, right? The people that are willing to sort of criticize and talk out are certainly the ones that are be able to kind of shape that perception. That makes sense. But that being said, certainly, like you've seen, we've done a little bit of reporting on this on a couple measures, right? Like with around the Chrome extension that was launched, to the company kind of explained as a way to avoid calendar spam, right? And there's certainly multiple employees that then were like, calendar spam has never been a problem at the company, and just held that this kind of disingenuous way to what they feel like is track employees. I think the other part of this has been that there is a legitimate concern about leaking, not we've spent a lot of time talking here about liberal political concerns of the company, but you know, some of the more damaging leaks have come actually from the right, where there was the employee that leaked the entire video to Breitbart of the all hands meeting after the election, which is unprecedented in Google history, right? No one's done that kind of thing before. And then leaking, there's an employee that came out and went to Project Veritas, the sort of sham journalistic group, about claiming that Google search is biased. And we've seen sort of both on the right, a lot of employees speak out about that. So I think that certainly the company and management feels much more, I don't know, much more alarmed, but equally alarmed about that behavior. And it's definitely taken steps to try to stem that. And that in many ways becoming like more of a conventional company. Like, right, imagine you don't really hear the sort of outcry at a company like Oracle, because Oracle was never a company that even allowed that kind of
conversation. Oracle was never right. Googly, as they used to say.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I think it's my long-winded way of saying yes.